Good evening. My name is Cindy Colm. Cindy, and I'm an alcoholic. Got in the habit of saying my last name, but I just read something in the literature that says that we don't do it when we're on audio tape. I got sober back in the day when we had phone books and everybody said their last name so you could find people, you know. Phone books are books, you know, that used to have. Anyway, I want to thank the committee for inviting me to come and share with you, and thank Mark for his hospitality, and hats off to the chef for the great food. Glad to be here. I'm glad to be sober. We'll get the stats out of the way. My sobriety date is March 10th of 1977, so you don't have to do the math. That's 45 years, and I'm only 36 years old. A testament to the great program I work. I'm half Eskimo. We're known for our stoicism, I guess. And my other half is a gentler German. And I grew up in San Bernardino, and there weren't a lot of Eskimos there. And there are none now. But I just, you know, I didn't feel like I fit in, no matter where I went or what I did. And being sober before even finding alcohol, it was very pronounced, you know. And I had this old idea that I carried into sobriety, and it still, unfortunately, revisits me. And that is, whatever it takes to make it here, I don't have it. And you know, when I found whiskey, it was the answer. It made me like you. It did worlds for you. And, you know, I was, as the book describes, restless, irritable, and discontent. And for some reason, I was lucky enough to find alcohol. I love Southern Comfort is what I loved. I love Old English 800 and Together and on my Captain Crunch with Crunch Berries. But, you know, I mainly like the hard stuff, you know, just get you downtown more quickly. And I didn't really do a lot of drugs. I did smoke marijuana, but I don't know, drugs, they scared me. So I didn't do them, you know. Drank terrible right from the very start. I'm one of those kind of drinkers that throws up all the time. But it got really good at it. I could tell in a moment's notice when it was coming. And even today when I have the flu, I'm like, you know, I'm golden. I can take it right up to the moment and, you know. Anyway, I grew up, my mom left before my memory starts. She went back to Alaska, where she lives now. And I grew up raised by our father with two of my brothers, 18 and a half months older and 18 and a half months younger. And like I said, we grew up in San Bernardino, and in the 1960s, there weren't, I'm 61, by the way, in the 60s, there weren't a lot of men raising children, and my dad had three of us under the age of five. So, you know, he's my hero, and even while growing up, though, he was a practicing alcoholic, and he was a functioning alcoholic. Somehow he raised three children, had a full-time job, and went to school full-time, and got, you know, a couple of PhDs while drinking, and he was a probation officer at the end of his drinking. And, you know, I just started getting in all kinds of trouble. My brother started getting in all kinds of trouble. And our poor dad, just, we were driving him crazy. And he was a newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had just had my stepmother and her three children left. So we had this big empty house. And he started moving new people in. And this is before sober living. So that he would just couch them on our couches, and I started to get introduced to AA members, and One of them was his sponsor, and you know, these people were super kind to me. And you know, I wasn't, I feel like I'm bending it down. I wasn't real social, and I still don't think I am. You know, I do better when I'm alone. I just like being alone. You know, I'm a real extrovert if I'm by myself. You know, I can entertain the crowd in my mind and, you know, charm myself. And I just had a hard time with people, you know. And when I drank whiskey, I loved you. I loved you so much that it would make me weep and throw up. But I love that feeling. I love being in love with people. And I just wasn't, I didn't feel that way when I was sober. So for me, drinking was a solution to life's problems that I didn't even know what life's problems were. My father, you know, like I said, I was just getting in all kinds of trouble. I had a girlfriend that I used to sneak out of the house, and then I'd go sneak her out of her house, and we'd go to parties, and I'd drop her off at her house and ring the doorbell and run away. But then I started forgetting details like running away. So I was getting in trouble, and my dad quit his job like any good newcomer does, and didn't work for a year. And he had three practicing teenage alcoholics at home, and he was going to a lot of AA meetings. And he decided one night to invite me to an AA meeting. And by this time, we had talked about my drinking. And of course, we sent him to Al-Anon. God bless the Al-Anon members. He couldn't live with us. But he went to go see Chuck C about us, and Chuck said, you know, you might want to visit the sister program. So thank God he did, you know, because he didn't really hound me about my drinking. But he did have a couple of, you know, rational discussions with me. And I remember him talking to me about my drinking, and I remember telling him, I'm not hurting anybody. And I really believe that to be true, that I was not hurting anybody. And the next time we talked about it, I was kind of in a different place. And I said, okay, if I'm hurting anybody, it's just me. And that seemed like the truth. And the truth was, when I got a glimpse of seeing how much heartache I caused my father, I couldn't stand it. And when I heard Chuck C. say, when I was new, that when he was talking about his wife, Elsa, and she would say, if you love me, you'd quit doing it. And he said, it's because I love you that I do. And I understood that. You know, when I think about the harm that I caused through my drinking, it makes me want to drink. And I mean, my dad invited me to this meeting, and he was going to go hear Chuck talk. And Chuck at that time, I don't know, was sober like 29 years. And it was a Friday night, and it was an Upland at Byron and Marion's meeting. And he went to go hear Chuck, and he didn't have to work that night. By this time, he had gotten his first job at Kellogg Mental Institution, graveyard shift, running the adolescent unit. So it was a great, you know, we had a party at our house every single night. And he would go to his meeting, he'd go straight to work from his meeting, and then he'd come home in the morning, and there'd be kids passed out all over the place. And he invited me to go hear Chuck talk and told me, you know, that he had 29 years, 30 years, whatever it was. And I can remember thinking, why would you want to go listen to someone who hasn't had a drink in 29 years? Like, what could they possibly have to tell you? And he went off to that meeting, and he told me he was taking David. And David was this kid I had met in Alateen. I went to two Alateen meetings, and they asked me to not come back because I was drinking. And, you know, they were serious. They were working their Alateen programs, and they didn't want any of my nonsense around. But there was this cute guy. He had long blonde hair down to his waist and played the drums and smoked Marlboro. Everything I wanted in a man. And I remembered him from Alateen. And he was one of those serious Alateens, but he was secretly drinking. My dad said, David's going with us tonight. And I said, why is he doing that? He said, he's an alcoholic. I said, oh, God, I'm sorry. And I felt so bad for him, you know. They went off to that meeting. My dad came home because he didn't have to work that night. He felt really spiritual, as most people did when they heard Chuck speak. And there were all these kids there, as usual. And he asked everybody, you know, where's Cindy? And they said, she's got a headache. She went to bed. Well, I had been drunk for several days straight. And I had eaten spaghetti that night. And my dad said, oh, she's got a headache. And then, you know, they kind of like made a little barricade in front of the door to try to prevent him from going in. But he made his way into my bedroom, and he saw me lying there, and I was completely white, and my eyeballs were rolling in the back of my head, and I had long hair then, and it was like laying in a sea of spaghetti. And my dad carried me out into the living room and asked these kids, you know, what has happened to her? What has she taken? He thought I had overdosed. And I told you I didn't really do drugs. You know, they're dangerous and they can kill you. So anyway, they just looked at him and said, she's got a headache. And he threw me into the car and took me over to Riverside Community Hospital, where they started to pump my stomach. And I did it for myself, all over my dad, all over the doctor, sat up. I said, oh, F, I'm drunk again. And I passed back out. And I was in a blackout for 3 days, and I came out of that blackout just a few times. But one of those times that I came out of that blackout, I was told the first 2 days that I slept in the bathroom with my head, you know, on the cold tile floor. And I either had my head on the floor or up on the toilet seat. And my dad was pouring, I don't know why they did this back in the 70s, but he was pouring buttermilk down me for sustenance, right? That's what we gave newcomers, buttermilk and jelly donuts. But anyway, he was pouring this buttermilk down me, and of course I was throwing it right back up at him, and I looked up at him, and he just had tears coming down his face. And he didn't say anything, and I couldn't literally say anything. And I remember he just put my face back down on the toilet seat. And the next time I came to, I think it was my dad told me, he said, you know, he was talking to me on the bed. And basically the gist of it was, you know, if you're going to live here, you have to go to meetings. I didn't have a fight in me. I mean, it wasn't like I could say, oh, you know, screw you or anything. It had no fight in me whatsoever. And at the end of our conversation, he said, you got to take a shower. And I said, I can't. And I remember he took my clothes off of me and he put me in the shower. And I just was in the corner and everything hurt. I mean, I could feel like every drop of water just hurt. And the next time I came to, I was talking to David on the phone. This was a few days later, and he told me that I was an alcoholic and that he was taking me to a meeting, and I said, I'm too sick tonight. And I believe I was too sick that evening. But David and his mother came and picked me up the next night, and they took me from Riverside to Pomona to the Triangle Club. I can open this. I guzzle a lot, so I'm going to turn around when I take a sip. I'm sorry, I haven't spoke for a while. I blew out my vocal cords somehow. And I've been in speech therapy for the last several months. And we'll see. I don't think I'm going to use up your full time tonight, but I'll go until my voice stops, and then I'll just do some interpretive dance for you. Anyway, you know, when I found out Larry was talking on the program, I was so hoping he would go before me, because every time I hear Larry talk, I just love his talk so much. It always makes me want to join AA. And then I go, oh, I'm in it. And then I think, oh, I should just work a better program. And then I think, I don't have to, because Larry's still here, and I can just go listen to him. So if I shove you out of AA, just hang in there and come back tomorrow morning. But anyway, it was great to hear Lalo Friday night. Loved his story, and there's so much good stuff in there. Anyway, where was I? Somewhere vomiting and overdosing and the meeting. Yeah, they took me to the Triangle Club for my first meeting, and I was still throwing up. This was now Monday night, and I came out of that blackout when they were shoving me into this back seat of this Chevy Nova. My dad said, they might call on you tonight. I said, what do you tell them? He said, you tell them your name and your disease and that you haven't had a drink in 3 days. I said, 3 days? I couldn't believe I hadn't had a drink in 3 days. Like, I can't go 3 days without drinking. I was like so amazed with myself. I was in a blackout almost the entire time, but I was impressed with myself. And I remember getting to that meeting, and I was still shaking and sweating and vomiting, and the men's restroom was the closest bathroom. I kept getting up and running to the men's room and throwing up. And I remember there was a guy named John Kay there at the Triangle Club, and I just loved him. He became one of my sponsors. He had a couple of digits missing, but I remember he'd bring me a Coke and a candy bar every Monday night to my seat, because he just knew I needed the sugar. And I sat in that meeting. I don't remember anything anybody said. I mean, they were probably dropping some good pearls of wisdom. You know how it is when a new person's in the room and it kind of changes the tone of the meeting and we really pour out all the good stuff, and I don't remember any of it. And the thing I remember was after the meeting, a very pretty lady came up and talked to me after the meeting, and she had a real soft voice, and she was like super clean. She like probably showered that day, and she said, oh, well, you know, we're starting to see young people come into AA, and, you know, a lot of them are using drugs, so it gets them here a little more quickly. And I said, I don't really use drugs. But anyway, Martha was what I remember from the meeting, and she was like an old timer, you know. I just remember how kind she was to me. And years later, I saw her, and we were talking about my first meeting and how much I appreciated her coming up and talking to me after the meeting. And I asked her how long she's sober, and I think she had like 90 days on me. But you know, when you're new, 90 days, that's like unattainable. It's so funny, I think she's still around too. But anyway, then started my sobriety, you know, and when alcohol was removed from my life, I was left with everything that drove me to drink in the first place. So I had full-blown symptomatic alcoholism without the drinking, and I had a really bad attitude, and I was barefoot all the time, and I went through 9 sponsors in my first 2 years. I was somewhat reluctant to take direction, and I decided to, get in a relationship, because I was prime relationship material, and his girlfriend happened to be in Hawaii, so she was an Al-Anon, so I figured she could release him, help where I can. And anyway, we had a crazy relationship, broke up, got back together about 18 times. We did it for the group. Give them something to talk about at coffee, And we did this for about 6 years. Clancy was my sponsor by this time. I had had sponsor number 10 finally for a couple of years since she moved to Orange County, and she suggested I get another sponsor. I didn't know who to get, so I just got her sponsor, which was Clancy. And Clancy was sponsoring my then boyfriend, who I was breaking up with all the time, John. And he's like, okay, let's give it a try, kid. And he was my sponsor for 39 years. So worked out pretty well. But anyway, John and I, in this crazy relationship, and like I said, after about 6 years, he finally went out and started drinking and using. And fortunately for me, by this time, I had something a little bit stronger than my obsession for him, and that was a relationship with a sponsor and a home group and my creator. And it wasn't a lot stronger, but it was strong enough to get me through that patch. And he was gone, I guess, for about a year. And he started coming back to AA rooms, and we started glancing each other from across the room. And I got pregnant. And so Clancy was sponsoring us both, and he said, okay, you're engaged. And so we were engaged for 13 days and got married Wednesday before home group. And crazy relationship. And John stayed sober, I guess, for about a year. And then he went back out again when our son was a year old. And just went in and out of AA, and he ended up asphyxiating, choking during an overdose, and died more than 25 years ago now. And our son was, by this time, 10 years old. It was right before his 11th birthday, and you go through hard times in sobriety. Life keeps happening, and AA was there through it all, and Clancy was there through it all, and my son is 36 years old. I have 2 grandchildren that I absolutely am in love with, and they're some of the best things that have happened in sobriety. And unfortunately, it wouldn't mean anything if I was not sober, because I don't know, there's something that happens here, like even the theme of this conference, we shared in a common peril, and that being the powerful cement that binds us, and Bill's kind of weaving a story through the book of building this arch through which we pass to freedom. And he's talking about this cement that binds us, and part of that is this common problem. And something happens for me when I walk into an AA room and I start talking to somebody, or I see somebody not doing well and I start talking to them. I think Lala was even talking about it last night, just thank God pulls me out of myself. I am so self-centered and so focused on self, hyper aware of how I am doing at every moment. And I need a lot of oomph to get out of this head. And anyway, I don't remember where I was going with that, but I was telling you about my grandkids, and I think, you know, part of, well, one thing Clancy did for me, he did a million things, but one of the things he did was I had read my inventory to him, which was a nightmare. If you've ever read an inventory to Clancy or know somebody who has, you were a passenger in the car while he was driving. And he always drove up Pacific Coast Highway, and he would drive to Camarillo, which was then a mental institution. And he would turn around at Camarillo and then drive back home, and you would continue to read your inventory. Well, I was certain that he was just going to drop me off there. But, you know, when I was growing up, I had things happen that shouldn't happen to little girls, and that popped up in my inventory. And I remember, you know, Clancy was seriously, Larry can back me up on this one, the worst driver on the planet. And it was pouring down rain that night, and it was super windy. And we were driving at Pacific Coast Highway, and I was talking about my next door neighbor and the incidents that happened. And all I had remembered about the incidents, and it, you know, I don't need to tap into all the memories now, but I know that they happened. But I remembered being cold, physically cold. And every time thereafter, every time I got cold, I broke out in big welts on my body, big, painful red welts. And that's not good if you're an Eskimo and you can't handle the cold, you know, but I couldn't handle it. I remember reading this part in my inventory, and Clancy was smoking like a fiend, and the windows were down, and the wind was blowing, and the rain was coming in the windows. And when I get to that part about the cold, he put a cigarette out, rolled the window up, and turned the heater on full blast. And I was never bothered by the cold again. Now, that's such an odd little story, isn't it? But it's like the kind of thing that happens in AA and the kind of healing that we find in these rooms that heal hurts that you think can never be fully healed. But another thing he made me do was he made me make amends to my mother. Now, I had met my mother. Well, obviously I met her because she gave birth to me, but I met her when I was 1 year sober because my father works a program, and he made amends to her, and that brought her back into our lives. Well, when I was 1 year sober, hard to imagine, you know, I wasn't the delicate flower that you see before you, and was somewhat rude and dismissive and disrespectful to her. She came down, I don't recall for how long it was, 7 days, 8 days, 10 days. And I think I visited with her for 15 minutes. And then I just got busy and didn't see her the rest of the time she was here. So when Clancy had me do my amends, he told me I had to write her once a month. I had to send her a card. And my favorite was the Mother's Day cards, you know, like, thanks for being there all those years, you know. He said, just get one that says Happy Mother's Day. But I did it. I started sending these cards, and they said to Amy, because that's her name, from Cindy, because that's my name. And after a few months, it said, Dear Amy. And then it said, Sincerely, Cindy. And then after a few months, I put a line or two in there. And I started doing this for quite a while, and I eventually got to a place where I was able to see her face to face. She was still in Alaska, like I said, she is still in Alaska. But I got to make face to face amends to her, and thank God for the process of amends that I learned here in AA, because one of the things that I was taught in my process of amends is at the end asking, what can I do to set this right? And one of my friends had told me, if people tell you something you can do and they're too general, they're too vague, ask for specifics. And thank God they told me to do that, because after I made amends to her, I asked her what I could do to set this right, and she said, well, you can call me Mom. I'm like, okay, like, I can call you Mom. And because when I asked her what I can do to set it right, well, what she had said was, just be a good daughter. Well, that's too vague. What does that look like to you? And that's when she said, call me Mom. And then I asked her, what else can I do? And she said, you can end our telephone conversations by saying, I love you. I'm like, okay. Wasn't a real big I love you kind of person, but I did it, you know? And it's so weird because she's been in my life for, I don't even know how long it's been now, at least 25, 30 years, and I can't imagine calling her Amy. I mean, it's so rude. And I can't imagine not saying I love you. You know, but that is not something that I would have given myself. That's not something, if you asked me if I wanted it, I would have said, that's what I want. That happened because of you guys. It happened because my dad made amends to her. It happened because I stayed sober long enough to get in the amends process and make amends to her. And you know, I've come to find out that even the suffering that I have felt in AA, and if you're new or if you're sober for a while and you're suffering, that suffering is not even about you. It looks like and it feels like it's about me when it's happening, but it is about the next person that I can help. You know, it's carving some way for me so that I can be useful. And that's one of the lines in the book that I love. It says, your experience will make you uniquely useful. You'll be able to help somebody that nobody else can touch. And it's because of your story. It's because of your suffering. It's because of what you went through. I had the chance to live with my dad for about 2.5 years. He is still sober. He's sober. He's 45. He's 47 years sober. He has Parkinson's dementia. And he's like one of the most beautiful human beings you've ever met. And I don't know where I got my personality. It definitely is not from him. But he's just such a loving man. But I think that's part of how I blew out my vocal cords, was he's very hard of hearing, and he has dementia. So, you know, I would yell whatever we were talking about, and then I'd have to yell it again. By the time he could understand what I was saying, then he would forget the context. And I was just yelling for 2.5 years. So, anyway, he's amazing. He, to me, walks this way of living that he has talked for so many years. I've never seen anybody more accepting of a diagnosis than him. And he has a kind of dementia, and it just breaks my heart sometimes because, you know, even the other day he told me, he said, I'm going away. And I don't like it when people go away. But, you know, when the pandemic first hit, I was like, yes. Not talk to people? Oh my God, this is awesome. I need could someone hand me a napkin or some cash? Something. Thank you. Um, Oh, that reminds me. And thank you, Mark. He brought this special pad that I'm standing on. I have really bad spine and neck problems. So afterwards, I don't know, sometimes people feel compelled to hug me. I guess it because they know I don't like it. But it jacks my neck up. So just, you know, if we talk after the meeting, just, you know, we can shake hands or you can give me cash. Also talk about my little brother for a minute. Fortunately for me, he's got 8 months to the day behind me. So we've been walking this path together. And next month, I'm going to try to help him make it. And hopefully Larry will try to help him make it. he'll be 45 next month. And, you know, I'm the most blessed ingrate you will ever meet. And, you know, spirituality, it's not a mood. It's really nice when it is. But it's the actions that I've learned here in AA and knowing that my sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And I'm glad it says maintenance of spiritual condition because sometimes my spiritual condition is not optimum. But on the maintenance of it, you know, and I say my little prayers and I meditate and I work with people and, you know, I have a crazy good life. I think I've only talked for a half an hour, but I feel like I'm done. So anyway, thank you all for being here and thank you for sharing in my sobriety.